from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, senators cast their final votes on a bill that would remove the permitting and safety training requirements to carry a concealed weapon in West Virginia. Members of the body also discuss a possible tobacco tax increase. In the House, delegates vote to allow WVU Tech to transfer its headquarters out of Fayette County. And should we amend the U.S. Constitution? Lawmakers are considering resolutions to do just that. We discuss the implications coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Senators put to a final vote a bill that gets rid of permitting and safety training requirements to carry a concealed weapon in the state. The bill has already been approved by the House of Delegates, but after some changes in the upper chamber, it will return to the House before it heads to the governor's desk. As approved by the state Senate, House Bill 4145 removes the permit and safety requirements for West Virginians over the age of 21. Anyone between the ages of 18 and 20 would be allowed to go through a provisional permitting process, much like the one currently in place. That process requires a safety course and, under this bill, live fire training. The bill keeps the current permitting process in place so West Virginians can still take advantage of the reciprocity agreements the state has to carry concealed in other states. Charles Trump is the Senate Judiciary Chair.
I know that at least with a few of our members, this bill is controversial. And I think I have to say at this point that I think it should not be. The gentleman from Kanawha made the observation in our committee consideration of this legislation last week that if you think about it, what we have now in West Virginia is a situation where this is legal, this is not. Legal, illegal. It's a policy question, and I support it. The expansion of this right to bear arms is guaranteed to all of us in our Constitution.
During Monday's floor session, Trump explained the provisions of the bill that he says he fully supports, including newly created felony offenses. Those include felony charges for anyone caught carrying concealed who's prohibited under state law from doing so, like convicted criminals. It increases penalties for someone who uses a weapon while committing another crime. Senator Herb Snyder, who voted against the bill, says while he supports the increased penalties, the bill does not address several other gun crimes, like brandishing or manslaughter.
We are handing, by passage of this bill, a grave responsibility to those that might stick that handgun in their pocket or their pants pocket, or beside them on a car seat. Because you may very well end up in a situation that you're going to be in an awful lot of trouble. If you're brandishing, or if somehow a confrontation, someone gets shot, the responsibility that comes with the action of this legislature is now handed in every one of the citizens of West Virginia. And I remind everyone how grave that responsibility is.
Senator Corey Palumbo says it's law enforcement and the safety of the general public he worries about when voting on the legislation.
Last year when this bill came up, the proponents of it said, well, the Sheriff's Association just opposes this because they want a bunch of money. They like their money. Well, this year they agreed to just get rid of the fee entirely. And I thought that was a great act of compromise. But that was rejected. And what that means is, I mean, the sheriffs are still going to get their money if we pass this bill, because people will still get the permits. But they still almost uniformly oppose this bill because of the public safety concerns. So I'm going to stand here today, and I'm going to stick with our law enforcement, who really do not like this bill. I'm going to stick with the majority of my constituents who do not like this bill. I'm going to stick with public safety.
Senator Kent Leonhardt says the bill actually increases the safety of West Virginians by allowing responsible gun owners to carry with fewer restrictions. After spending 21 years in the military, specializing in Middle East relations, Leonhardt says the bill does more than just protect West Virginians from the home invasions other lawmakers have used as examples in support of the bill.
Ladies and gentlemen, ISIS is here in the United States, imported through open borders and homegrown radicalism. Armed citizenry and constitutional carry will help deter terrorism in West Virginia.
Senators voted 24-9 to approve the legislation. Members of the House will have to consider some Senate-approved changes, including the increased felony charges and the removal of a tax credit for people who continue to use the permitting process. Delegates could vote on those changes as soon as Tuesday. Last year, Governor Tomlin vetoed a similar piece of legislation approved during the 2015 session. Members of the Senate also considered an amendment to a bill proposed by Governor Tomlin to increase the state's tobacco tax. Senator Roman Prezioso today presented an amendment to the full chamber on the floor. His change would increase the tax rate from $1 per pack of cigarettes as proposed by Tomlin to $1.55, a full dollar more than the current tax rate. Prezioso explained the extra income would be used to balance the 2016 and 2017 budgets, which are hundreds of millions of dollars short in revenues. In 2018, Prezioso says a portion of the income would be committed to funding PEIA, the Public Employees Health Insurance Agency. His amendment was approved, and the bill will be put to a final vote tomorrow. In the House, delegates put a controversial measure of their own to a vote today, a bill that would allow the West Virginia University Institute of Technology to move from its current location in Montgomery. Rob Engel reports.
House Bill 4310 would change state code to allow WVU Tech to move its headquarters from Montgomery to Beckley, less than 50 miles away into neighboring Raleigh County. But this short move has caused big debate about whether or not the town of Montgomery could sustain itself after losing the university. In September of last year, the West Virginia University's Board of Governors voted unanimously in support of the move, saying that the Montgomery campus was no longer financially viable and the move to Beckley was the only option to salvage the shrinking program. But today's decision was much more divisive, as delegates from both sides of the aisle rose in opposition and support of the bill. Delegate Mick Bates represents Raleigh County, which would benefit from the move.
This is not about Fayette County. It's not about Raleigh County or Kanawha or even Mercer. It's about students, present and future. This is not about any county or any institution of higher education. It's about allowing WVU Tech to survive and to place it in a position to thrive.
Montgomery is a community of about 1,700. Delegate David Perry represents the district in Fayette County and says the decline of WVU Tech is due to improper funding and lack of support from the university's administration.
Is this a move to create a two-state institution in the state of West Virginia with so many small institutions we have that serve students across this state? Possibly so. I can't say. But I can tell you there is an economic impact to Montgomery, there's an economic impact to the Upper Kanawha Valley, and there's an impact to the students that West Virginia Tech serves, and the ability to increase those number of students has been hampered and hindered by the instability created by WVU and the press over the last few years.
The House passed the bill by a vote of 67-32. It now moves to the Senate. For the legislature today, I'm Rob Engel in the House.
The House of Delegates is just beginning its work on a bill that would ban one of the nation's most commonly used second trimester abortion methods. Liz McCormick joins us with an update on the progress of the bill.
As approved in the Senate, Senate Bill 10 would ban what are commonly referred to as dismemberment abortions. That ban is only when the abortion is elective, not in the cases of medical emergencies. In the House, discussion over the bill began with a public hearing this morning.
Senate Bill 10 would ban what are medically known as dilation and evacuation abortions in West Virginia. While physicians say D&E abortions are common across the country, testimonies given before the state Senate said those abortions are actually rare in West Virginia. Physicians also testified it is one of the safest abortion options. But during a public hearing on the bill Monday morning, five people spoke in favor of the bill, calling the technique gruesome. Senate Bill 10 requires doctors performing these types of abortions euthanize the fetus before dismemberment. Karen Cross is the political director for National Right to Life and supports the bill.
There are at least 12 studies which have been done by the abortion industry that show maternal safety is not compromised as a result of providing a feticidal agent prior to abortion. Dismemberment of a live, fully formed baby in the second trimester may be the standard of care for abortionists. However, for regular medical practice, many OB-GYNs report that there is no medical emergency that requires dismembering a living baby.
But Sharon Lewis, executive director for the Women's Health Center of West Virginia, says the bill interferes with the patient-doctor relationship.
It is a fact that restricting access to safe abortion care leads desperate women to risk death to end an unwanted pregnancy. I believe that it would be a beautiful thing if all of the so-called right-to-life advocates would expend the energy that they're currently placing on restricting abortion on improving the lives of the abused child, the hungry child, the neglected child, or the orphan child.
Delegate Joe Ellington is the House's Health Committee Chair, and he's also a practicing OBGYN.
There's pros and cons to both sides of it. One part is terminating a fetus that's alive before it is extracted by the procedure that the sponsors are trying to eliminate. It does affect the standard of care that's currently in place with the medical profession. From an obstetrician standpoint, I'm going to have to balance that with what the proponents are willing to do.
In all, 20 people spoke during the public hearing Monday morning in front of Ellington's committee. 15 people spoke against it.
Members of the House Health Committee could take up Senate Bill 10 as soon as tomorrow. For the Legislature Today, I'm Liz McCormick.
Tonight, we continue meeting members of the 82nd West Virginia Legislature with this edition of Meet Your Lawmaker.
Doug Facemeyer is a Democrat from Braxton County. He was elected to the West Virginia Senate in 2008 to represent the 12th Senatorial District. He previously served as the chair of the Senate Committee on Energy, Industry, and Mining. Jordan Hill was elected to the House of Delegates in 2014. A Republican, he represents the House of Delegates' 41st District. Hill is from Nicholas County. George Ambler represents the House's 42nd District from Greenbrier County. He was elected to the seat in 2012 and is a Republican. Delegate Ambler serves as the Vice Chair of the House Natural Resources Committee and chaired the Committee on Water Resources during the interim session. Ambler is an American history and civics teacher for high school students who says he loves his career in the school system. Ray Canterbury is a Republican from Greenbrier County. He represents the 42nd House of Delegates District. Canterbury was first elected to the House in 2000. He chairs the House Committee on Pensions and Retirement.
The U.S. Constitution was ratified in 1787 and since has been amended 27 times. Now, the West Virginia legislature is considering joining other states to call for another change to the nation's framework, requiring Congress to balance the nation's budget each year, except in times of national emergency. Those supporting the call for an Article 5 convention say it's necessary to rein in out-of-control federal spending, but many who oppose it have their doubts. The House Judiciary Committee held a public hearing on the matter Saturday. Here is some of the testimony for and against a convention of states.
The founders knew the federal government might one day become drunk with the abuses of power, and they gave us a tool to fix it. The tool is Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution. Washington, D.C. is broke. The federal government is spending this country into the ground. We cannot trust those in power to fix it on their own. They have proven time and time again they are not up to the task. A balanced budget amendment must be added to the U.S. Constitution. 49 states have it, including West Virginia, and our federal government needs it.
I can't imagine what life is like without this basic respect for our constitutional government. Any proposal for a constitutional convention of the states puts all of this at risk. The only known is that we would face at least a decade of division and litigation in a chaotic environment.
During the Constitutional Convention, George Mason thought it prudent to bring up the possibility of the states calling for a convention because they had already approved the possibility of Congress proposing amendments, but he you know, as their founders were genius, they looked into the future and they saw that even republics, especially democracies, become tyrannical over time. And unless the people, through their local representation, had the ability to change amendment, to propose amendments, none would be passed, or none would be proposed that would limit Congress or limit the federal government.
A balanced budget amendment could harm economic growth as well as national security by limiting the ability of governments to make needed investments, deal with depressions and recessions, and respond to national disasters and threats to national security. Those concerned about debt and deficits.
The Convention of States proposal is one that was also argued at the State House during the 2015 session. Members of the Senate approved a resolution calling for the Article 5 convention, but the House ran out of time on the final night to debate the measure. Both House and Senate committees have taken up resolutions so far this year, and here tonight to discuss the implications of those resolutions is Dr. Robert Behrman. He's a professor of political science at Marshall University. Dr. Behrman, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
By now, I think we have a basic understanding of what the resolutions do, but what is the history of these conventions? As it says, it's contained in Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution.
What Article 5 does, it presents two methods for proposing amendments and two methods of ratifying. And we've used one of the methods of proposing where Congress, by two-thirds vote in each house, proposes the same amendment and goes out to the states, and three-quarters of the states ratify it. Mostly it's been by the state legislatures. With the repeal of prohibition, it was by state conventions. The second way to propose is this idea of two-thirds of the states petitioning Congress to call a convention, and then the convention would meet. We've never done this since the adoption of this new Constitution. Under the Articles of Confederation, the official way to change that constitution was unanimous consent of all the states as expressed by their delegates to the Continental Congress. They called a convention and to amend the Articles of Convention, and the first thing they did was decide to write a new constitution. And that's a precedent that has a lot of people worried.
Right. That is, some of the opposition point to that, saying when you call a convention of states, we're not 100% sure that you can limit people to discussing just this one topic. And of course, they want to discuss the balanced budget. Do we know that we can do that? Can we limit those delegates to discussing just this one thing?
I was looking through this House Bill 4449, and there's a lot of language in there that tries to do that. It says if the convention goes in another direction or doesn't follow the provisions of this commission, that there's supposed to be a compact of the states agreeing to do this, then it's ultra vires and null and void, and they can't do it. But the problem with that is how far different from, okay, it sets out the budget amendment shall mean, and it gives the proposed amendment that they want. What if a state comes in with different wording? then you're going to have to debate on the wording, and you're going to have to vote on that. And if it's not the same wording as this, does that mean that it's null and void? And if somebody puts an amendment in, that, you know, how far can you go, and who's going to enforce it? Mm-hmm. And it's just not really clear. And it's the only precedent we have was a runaway convention. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that any convention is necessarily going to be runaway, but it's a legitimate concern.
So they want to limit to this balanced budget, but you said, you know, we've never used this process before, but what does a convention of states actually look like? Does it look like a Republican or a Democratic National Convention where you go, where all of these people go and they have conversations? What does it really look like?
Well, what I'm not really sure, but mm-hmm. judging by what the language in this House Bill 4449, it says that West Virginia will have three delegates. That's how many representatives we have in the House of Representatives. So I would conclude from that that there are going to be 435 state representatives at this convention, adjusted, you know, to reflect their number of seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. From the language in this bill, you could conclude that they're going to present this proposed, I mean, you know, it defines the proposed amendment as this amendment. And so they're going to just talk about it a little bit and then vote for this amendment and or against it, and that's it? Or are they going to discuss what they want in a balanced amendment, and Nevada is going to say this, and somebody from Michigan is going to say that, and somebody from Pennsylvania is going to say something else, and they come up, you know, with modifications of this? We don't know. We've never done it under Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution.
So it could be a risky thing for them to take on. They're not quite sure what they're going to get.
Right. It seems overly optimistic to conclude that you're just going to be able to present this one. The balanced budget amendment is defined as this, period. And like nobody else has any idea of how we could go about balancing the budget. Mm-hmm. And there's bound to be discussion. People are going to say, well, let's tweak this, let's tweak that. And you know, once you start that ball rolling, you don't know where it could end. I mean, there seems to be a commitment to this idea of focusing on a balanced budget, and you know, a lot of people have fears they're going to repeal the First Amendment and stuff like this. I think that's probably far-fetched, but again, we don't know. We've never tried it.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Sure. Robert Behrman from Marshall University. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Here's a look at some of the state's representatives from Central West Virginia in this edition of Meet Your Lawmakers.
Mike Romano represents the state's 12th senatorial district. A Democrat, the senator hails from Harrison County. Romano was elected in 2014 and previously served on the Harrison County Commission, resigning from the post after his election to the Senate. Denise Campbell is a Democrat from Randolph County. Elected in 2010, she represents the House's 43rd District. Campbell serves as the Minority Vice Chair of the House Committee on Health and is a registered nurse and nursing home administrator and calls nursing her number one passion. William Hartman represents the 43rd House of Delegates District. From Randolph County, Hartman is a Democrat and was elected to his seat in 2002. From a rural part of the state, Hartman previously served as the chair of the Commission on Forest Management Review. He's a retired member of the West Virginia Army National Guard.
Members of the House of Delegates are advancing a bill that could potentially get rid of county indoor smoking bans. We'll discuss the issue tomorrow with one of the bill's sponsors and a local health board chair. Also tomorrow, members of the Senate will vote on a bill to increase the state's tobacco tax, helping to close the projected $466 million budget gap for the 2017 fiscal year. In the House, delegates will consider a bill allowing West Virginians to share the ownership of a cow to consume raw milk produced by the animal. West Virginia Public Broadcasting will bring you those votes live beginning tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. on the West Virginia Channel. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
You. AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.